I'm Adam Evans with the NIRS News. The Queensland Government has announced a number of measures to tackle the cost of petrol if they're re-elected at the October state election. Premier Stephen Miles has promised to establish 12 state-owned petrol stations in locations where competition is needed the most. In his State of the State address, Premier Miles is expected to unveil plans to prohibit petrol stations from raising their price more than once in a day. There are also plans to cap the amount of fuel that can be raised by 5 cents a day. A new report is calling for a dedicated First Nations housing and homelessness plan to address concerning issues in the community. Homelessness Australia has found that 32% of homeless children are Indigenous, despite the fact that children make up less than 7% of the age group. Homelessness Australia's CEO Kate Colvin says the current approach isn't working.
What we're calling for and what a lot of First Nations organisations have been calling for is for there to be a separate and parallel First Nations housing and homelessness plan to address the issues around housing and homelessness that are really specific to First Nations communities, but also to have that First Nations plan led by First Nations communities.
Indigenous communities in Cobar, Eden, Inverell and Yamba will have their say on the future of waterways in New South Wales today. It's all part of the New South Wales Government's Aboriginal Water Strategy. Workshops will take place from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and will travel across New South Wales throughout August. Authorities in Victoria say they're confident they have contained the state's deadly Legionnaires' disease outbreak. They also say they believe they found the source of the outbreak. Victoria's Chief Health Officer Claire Looker says authorities have pinpointed a cooling tower in Laverton North in Melbourne's west.
It is a preliminary result, so there is a lot more work. We've not downed tools. There's lots more to do and lots further investigation to understand why that Legionella grew in that cooling tower. But yes, very, very reassuring to have that initial result back.
A man in his 60s and a woman in her 90s have died after being caught in the outbreak. A large crocodile believed to have been responsible for a fatal attack on a 40-year-old father in far north Queensland has been euthanized. Rangers had targeted a crocodile with a distinctive scar near its snout as an extensive search for the New South Wales man near Cooktown entered the third day. It's believed the man had been fishing with his wife and children at Annan River Bridge on Saturday when he fell into the water, failing to resurface. Wildlife officers began surveying crocodiles in the area after revealing the target animal had a distinctive marking. Overseas now, and voices across the globe are expressing concern over the growing number of arrests in Venezuela following recent disputed elections. Pope Francis says Venezuela is living in a critical situation. The remarks came after Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro announced that the government had arrested 2,000 opponents and pledged to imprison more people. A US judge has ruled Google violated antitrust laws by illegally monopolizing its online search in advertising markets. In a landmark case, the US Department of Justice sued Google over its control of the search market, which amounted to about 90% of online and 95% of smartphones. The judge said Google paid tens of billions of dollars to ensure it was the default search engine on smartphones and also charged high prices in searching and advertising, reflecting its monopoly power. We'll have more coming up next.
The skills you bring will help us find better ways, and your ideas will help us shape a future we can all be proud of. We all bring something different. Grow with us. riotinto.com/careers.
Program sponsor.
The National Indigenous Radio Service, the voices of our people.
To sport, and at the Paris Olympics, the Hockey Roos campaign has come to an end with a 2-3 loss to China in the quarterfinals last night. The men's team, the Kookaburras, were also knocked out of the games last night after their 2-0 quarterfinal loss to the Netherlands. Meanwhile, Waka Waka man Caleb Law came 7th in the 200-metre sprint this morning with a time of 20.75. He'll be running in the repechage round tonight for a chance at the semi-finals. And if you're up late tonight, you can catch Paddy Mills and the Boomers take on Serbia in the quarterfinals at 10:30 p.m. To stay up to date with the NIRS news, follow us on Instagram, like us on Facebook, or visit our website at nirs.org.au. And if you've missed a bulletin, you can catch up on the Community Radio Plus app.
Did you know that drinking any alcohol while you're pregnant can harm your bub? It's hard to stop drinking,
But if you choose to drink alcohol while you're pregnant, it can leave your bub with all sorts of problems that can last their whole life. Remember, pregnancy and grog don't mix. If you need to yarn about it, visit your local Apunipama Clinic and Wellbeing Centre. We're here to help. Our health and our bubba's health is in our hands.
Station sponsor.
There's a simple private and free test you can do to detect early signs of bowel cancer. If you're over 50, you should receive a screening kit in the mail every 2 years. You can also order a kit online or talk with your health worker. It's important to do the test as soon as you can. Too many of our mob are getting sick from bowel cancer. That's why I did the test and encouraged my community to do it too. If found early, almost all bowel cancers can be treated. Screening for bowel cancer can help you stay strong and healthy for yourself, your family, and community. For more information, have a yarn with your health worker or visit IndigenousBowelScreen.com.au.
Station sponsor.
Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416.
National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NIRS, National News Radio Service. Have you saying yarn up strong. Now, improving transportation in Australia for people with disabilities is on the up, which is a great thing. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Juliet Middleton, CEO of Live Big. Juliet on the line. Good morning, Juliet. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm cold.
Are you cold? You're in Sydney. That's right, you are.
I am in Sydney, standing in front of the fire. It's been unseasonably cold. So
well, we're warm up here in North Queensland, but thinking of you.
You don't want to get out and use much public transport.
I hear you. Look, and speaking of transport, congratulations. Now, you're the CEO of Live Big.
I am.
So tell us who is Live Big and how long you've been there operating, please.
Yeah, so Live Big provides allied health therapy, things like speech therapy, occupational therapy, psychology, and even music therapy to people with disabilities in the community.
Yes.
We've been operating for many years, and we operate from all the way up Cairns and Townsville, across to Perth and down to Melbourne.
Okay, fantastic. And how long have you been the CEO there?
I have been, I'm into my third year now, so a little while, and I love it.
Beautiful, fantastic. So we're talking improving transportation in Australia with people with disabilities. Look, it feels that the government has dropped the ball in this department?
Look, I think it's more about being able to improve things. Now, we can always do better, both for people with disability and without disability.
Sure.
Where if there was any ball that had been dropped, I would say, and most, I don't think anyone would disagree with me on this, it's about including people with disability in the improvement decisions.
Sure, fantastic. And so what are we looking at? Transportation? I mean, like, we're talking about planes, we're talking cars, buses, taxis,
but
even pathways and what have you, elevators or lifts, so to speak,
Well, that's a very good point. Even just, using our own bodies to move around, getting across, being able to read or see signs or listen to crossings at roads. But mostly these reforms are around public transport standards, so related to what we think of as your traditional public transport, your trains, your buses, your aeroplanes.
So, we're talking government, but we're talking private enterprise, business who creates, the offices or buildings or what have you. It's across the board, isn't it, Juliet?
It is across the board. And recently I've been talking about, whilst this is all, when we talk about major reform, we instantly think public systems and government. I think there's a lot that can be done in our local areas, in councils, for example. There's so much just around us. schools, places of education, places of worship, just raising that awareness about how difficult it is for some people to access those yes. places.
Yes. And look, we're talking public transport, you know, servicing a crucial lifeline for millions of Australians, aren't we?
Absolutely. And, you know, that ability to be able to get out into the community for whatever reason is critical to everybody's health and well-being.
Yes.
And, you know, there is, we work with a lot of people where they're actually their main goal is to be able to use transport to get where they need to be.
Mm.
And, you know, it's really challenging. And it's not just about the disabilities that you can see. You can imagine if you have a sensory impairment, the noise on a train or a bus, you know, or the ability to hear announcements, you know, when they're even working,
or read
them. People refer to buses as being one of the most challenging because, you know, the way in which they sort of move erratically, they're the most unpredictable.
Mm. And you bring up a very important point. It's disabilities that we cannot see and what the individual is going through or the hardship. And we're not understanding that, are we?
No. If you can't see it, it does. Of course, it makes things a lot more difficult to understand. I know, like, so down here in Sydney, I noticed the other day that they're still doing I think it's a pretty funky initiative where you can get a lanyard, you know, one of those things you wear around your neck.
Yes.
And it's got sunflower, like little sunflowers on it.
Mm.
And when people see that, it's indicating that they may have a disability and may need some assistance.
It's a soft education, but a powerful one.
That's right. But, you know, again, if people actually have one of these lanyards and no one knows what it's for, what's the point?
Well, exactly. So it's about promoting, no matter what product you got, we need to promote it and get it out there. And so we all understand it. And there's the communication.
That's right. And it's about, I always talk about raising awareness. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about transportation or something else. It's about the more that we talk about it.
Mm.
And it's the little gestures. So if we all, when we are out and about, be more mindful, then do as I do.
Mm.
Following and leading by example.
We're all in this together, aren't we, Gillian?
We are, absolutely. And I know that, you know, if we're thinking about, so where you're based in Cairns, lots of areas that I talk to, it's not just about being able to use the public transport, it's about whether it's even available.
Yeah, that's true too. Exactly. Look, thank you for sharing. So very important. A big shout out to Live Big and your team.
Oh,
thank you very much. Julie, you stay warm and we will yarn soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All the best, Julie. You take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
A deadly yarn there. Gillian Middleton, her name is CEO of Live Big. And we're talking about improving transportation in Australia for people with disabilities. Look, so very important. And public transport serves as a crucial lifeline for millions of Australians. And look, the thought of communication for people who've got a disability that we can't see. Gillian brought up a good point there. And having lanyards and a beautiful yellow sunflower then describes or educates the people around that a person with disability, so we can sort of keep our eyes and ears open for that. Look, so very important, and thank you for the yarn there, Juliet Middleton, CEO of Live Big. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your saying yarn up strong. We're live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your dingy country, BBM Bumrabrip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS. Your host, the bally one, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, host for your daily program, National Talk Black. Too deadly.
The city lights are driving me so crazy. As I walk the lonely streets of old Tamworth, how I wish that I was back there in the dream time. In the country where there's always peace and quiet. Oh, I wish that I was back in the dream time. Hear the didgeridoo a droning in the night. We're
It makes me feel so lonely. For the gum trees and the taste of porcupine. I see my brothers, I see my sisters here in Tamworth. Torn apart by government ways and city life. Oh, I wish that I was back in the dream time. Hear the didgeridoo a droning in the night. Where corroborees are seen by the firelight. Where the white man's ways won't bother me.
We got Talk Black with Uncle Trevor. Murray from the Curry, call in on 1-800-422-416. 98.7 FM BBM.
One generation from a warrior. One generation from a warrior. One generation from a warrior. That's what we are. One generation from a warrior. That's what we are. One generation from a warrior. From a warrior, that's what we are. One generation from a warrior, that's what we are.
Our fathers were warriors, their fathers before them. But though we're now civilized, our hearts are not far from them. 'Cause we're
one generation from a warrior.
One generation from a warrior.
From a warrior,
that's what we are.
One generation from a warrior,
that's what we are.
One generation from a warrior.
One generation from a warrior.
One generation from a warrior,
that's what we are.
One generation from a warrior,
yes, that's what we are. Now that we know where our people come from, we found our identity, our spirit lives on and on.
Shabit got a rubber-dub style, island warrior, but me plan all wild. Listen to the beat, to the rhyme, to the rhythm. We gon' make you jump, kakar, now you get him. To kick a raga in a natty vibration. We are the children of the next generation. Coming to you with a positive style. All simply, I'm the warrior, but me plan no while.
One generation from a warrior.
One generation from a warrior.
One generation from a warrior.
That's what we are.
One generation from a warrior.
Yes, that's what we are.
One generation from a warrior.
One generation from a warrior.
One generation from a warrior.
That's what we are.
One generation from a warrior.
Yeah, yes, that's what we are. Our fathers were warriors, their fathers before them. But though we're not civilized, our hearts are not far from them.
'Cause we're one generation from a warrior.
One generation from a warrior.
One generation from a warrior,
that's what we are.
One generation from a warrior,
yes, that's what we are.
One generation from a warrior.
One generation from a warrior.
One generation from a warrior,
that's what we are.
One generation from a warrior,
yes, that's what we are.
Because you can't resist, because you know you're loving and I'm ready. So, but it's only because me become a insisting in the island styles. Only while all them upon wallers and our people upon you love when you just need that them is
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your Dingy Country. That's BBM Bumbadrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Yarn up strong, you mob, on National Talk Black, too deadly. All right, from country to the classroom, building relationships that empower teachers, students and communities. Talking about taking teachers to the mountain, that's what it's all about. And we're going to catch up a yarn now with Deadly Brother Kevin Lowe, lead investigator on the Culturally Nourishing School Associate Professor. He's on this project, fantastic project, and Kevin on the line. Kevin, good morning.
Thank you so much, Trevor. Great to hear from you and great to hear your intro.
Yeah, too dearly, my brother. Thank you for coming to the program. Before we start, brother, let the mob know who your mob, where you from, Kevin.
Trevor, I'm a Gubbian fellow from southeast Queensland. I grew up in country New South Wales. My mum was a single mum and was living in what was Gomeroi country, or is Gomeroi country, and moved down to Wiradjuri country and then finally moved down to Sydney to, when I was a teenager. And I settled here. I've taught out in central New South Wales, right out to the west, out there towards Bourke, and I've settled back to Sydney to work at a university to try to sort of put all things I've learnt as a teacher into the heads of new emerging teachers and to sort of try to give back to the community.
Beautiful, fantastic. And when you look at this topic here we're talking about, from country to classroom, it's a beautiful vehicle, you could say, and taking the teachers to the mountain, so to speak, you know. And you being a First Nation man, I mean, how simple is it? You know, life is simple. People complicate it, or the curriculum complicates it. You're taking the teachers to country and looking at our mob, our students who are, you know, on land, on country, more open-minded, more eager to learn because they're comfortable in their own space, are they not?
They are, absolutely. And I must say, look, what we're trying to do here, Trevor, is, in a sense, you know, we're looking at the sort of the realities of where our kids are. And our kids are, you know, going to schools, you know, all over the countryside, and they often, you know, have teachers in front of them who I'm a great believer in teachers. I grew up in a teaching family, and I've seen lots of really, really good teachers, but I've seen a lot of confused teachers, and I've seen a lot of teachers who are really confused by the historical poor relationships that have sort of settled across schools between Aboriginal families and communities and schools, and the lack of you know, acknowledgement and recognition that schools don't have about the sort of the experiences and traditions and aspirations of our families. So, you know, our work in this space of the learning from country is one element of a much larger project where we're working with teachers to change their practices. We're working with principals to change how they understand being a principal in a school, what Aboriginal kids should look like and what their responsibilities are. And we're also looking to really empower our community to sort of take a real interest in the school and to start becoming more demanding of what they expect schools to provide for their kids in school. So the learning from country is the very first element, and one of the elements that we keep on coming back to over and over again throughout the year. We take a group of teachers and we work with them for a whole year, and we sort of take them back over and over again to this concept of country. What does it mean when a kid gets up and says, you know, I'm a Wiradjuri kid, or I'm a Gubbi Gubbi child, or, you know, I'm from, you know, other communities? They're actually sort of telling schools so much about themselves, and they want the schools to understand that. And schools have got really often no idea what that actually means, their aspirations for identity. So we ask the community to really step up and take these teachers on a journey.
Yes.
Now, what's the journey that they want? What is it that they want this to know about them. What's the story that they want to be left in the minds of those teachers for them not to forget every time they're in classrooms and they've got kids in front of them? What is it that they need to know and remember about this community and what they want for their children? So that's where we start, and we go out on country, we travel across the country. I mean, in some places, you know, we've been working in inner city locations. You know, one of our schools is right here in the middle of Redfern, you know, Day Dot, I guess, where the whole revolution of black politics started way back when. And they take those teachers on a different journey, but they go down to the places that really matter to them.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of things we do, and we're individualising it so that it's not, you know, just one story. We can just take them down the art gallery and show them a painting and go to the museum and show them something historical and say, that's country.
Yes.
It's got to be personal to different locations.
Kevin, I'm picking up that it's virtually cultural awareness on steroids. It's powerful. It's on ground, on country, with the mob. They're teaching the kids. They're getting educated on the mob, on the country, elders and what have you. They're in the community. It's powerful and simple.
It is powerful, yeah. And you know what we've done is, you know, because it was such a small part of the overall investment, but what an incredible investment it was that we gave the schools some money to employ a separate person into the school. We call them cultural mentors. So someone who isn't there doing the busy work of schools and helping schools, you know, get kids back to school or to navigate difficult conversations with parents. Their job is just to sit and work with teachers about the things that they need to know in their classrooms about how they're teaching. So it's not that they're not there to tell a math teacher how to teach, you know, advanced mathematics, but they are there to observe what happens in classrooms and how teachers engage and teach Aboriginal children and how they can understand and be better at doing that work. So it's a very much a relationally focused project, and these cultural mentors work with the elders in the community, and they work out what is it that we're going to have this time with them. We give them the whole 12 months to work with the teachers, but intensely we give them 10 weeks and say, what are that 10 weeks and what are things you want these people to really know about this community?
So this has been practiced now, Kevin? This is up and going? This is happening now, yes?
Going right,
and how long has it been running for, and how's the results looking?
Well, the results are fantastic. But we've been running for 4 years. So,
okay, brother, yep.
The project started, you know, basically right at the beginning of bloody lockdown. So we were really
in the thick of things.
not being able to get out to the schools.
Yes.
You know, for those first 2 years, that was challenging.
Yeah.
But we've settled now, and we start each year, like, you know, basically, you know, first few weeks of term one, the schools have identified the teachers. We come along and the community, and we yarn up in the morning, get in the bus, and then we go on a really big drive. And you know, sometimes, like, you know, one of the schools we went to, you know, they got, and we drove about 80 k's out of town, and they wanted to show these teachers this particular scar tree. You know, but it was a story. You know what? It was a story on the bus, and the story coming back on the bus was as important as actually being there. But the whole thing was the whole experience of being there with those people and yarning up about what was going on and where they were going to go to and what that particular tree represented for them, and then the stories that went on the way back home.
Yes. Powerful. And so if you look at it, the teachers become students, don't they?
They are absolutely. And this is what the teachers actually say. It's extraordinary that some of these teachers have been in the schools that they're working in, and they've been there. Some of them said, look, we've been here for 20 years.
Yeah.
And we thought we had a bit of a reasonable knowledge of the community. We didn't know any of this. You know, like we were working in a school in Wollongong, you know, big industrial city, and the community wanted to sort of say, look, you know, we're not powerless, we're not helpless, and we don't have, you know, we just don't sit here and wait for white people to come along and do this stuff for them. We've set up our own medical services, we've set up our own legal services, we've set up our own employment services. So they wanted to take the teachers and say, you know, you might think that we're just sitting here and bludging, but have a look at what we've done, and have a look at what we do, and have a look at, sort of, in a sense, the infrastructure we're putting into our community. And that was an eye-opener. They had no idea that these facilities had been set up by a community, run by a community, administered by a community, and they were running really effective programs to really serve the needs of the community. You know, they just had no idea about that.
And regarding the students? Are we talking primary, high school? We're talking what ages?
What grades? Students are both primary, secondary, and all the way through from kidney right through to year 12. But our primary work is actually sort of helping teachers to become better teachers. So,
good.
As I said, we take these teachers a cohort, you know, 6 or 8, sometimes 10 teachers, and we take those teachers through a whole year of activity, which, you know, centres back over and over again back to this concept of country and community aspirations.
But yes.
One of the things that's really important, Trevor, is that we haven't given up on the notion of treaty, and
yes.
We actually have, at the end of our project, we're asking schools to have developed the micro treaty between themselves and their communities.
Beautiful.
On what the community wants education to look like over the next 50 years.
Yeah,
what do they really
fantastic.
Want? Yes. And how do they want schools? So it's not about, like, you know, in the sense of, you know, more football for the football club or more new jerseys for the, you know, but it's about sort of what does education going to look like for us? What
exactly.
do we think is absolutely critical for us? And often they turn to the question of we want to see language and culture really represented here. We want our kids' senses of identity to be really understood.
Yes.
And we want to see those things as being really positive for students. The more they get of that, the more they're willing to be at school, the more they're engaged
exactly.
in their math lessons and their science lessons and everything else. Because most, you know what, most parents, they want their kids to be numerate, they want them to be literate, and they want them to get good opportunities to get employment.
Exactly.
I've never heard a parent ever say, I don't care about education. They do care about it really intensely.
Sure. And when you look at it, we live in a forever changing world, and things don't change if things don't change. Change is the engine of growth, and you've got to adapt to the changes to move forward. Yep.
That's exactly right. And we're sort of in a sense the schooling system, while it looks like there's lots of change and lots of busy work going on, there's a whole bunch of things that don't change, and those things have settled into schools and become almost law. And some of that stuff that's settled into the space of schools is the very thing that we want to change, because they're the things where, as we were talking about at the beginning, the curriculum is not a friend of, you know, our experiences. It's not a friend of our histories and cultures. And we're really sort of trying to sort of really open that up and show the ways, giving teachers ways to be able to navigate
yes.
through what is a real maze
yep.
to find better practices of being better teachers and to use better content and to be more knowledgeable and more relational with kids.
Yeah, beautiful. I love it. Hey, beautiful yarn with you, Kevin. Thank you so very much. Big shout out to Culturally Nourishing School, Schooling. I think it's fantastic. And I said, taking the teachers to the mountain, it is fantastic. Thank you for your yarn. Good luck with it all. Please do keep in touch. And big shout out to our Deadly students out there learning on country, my brother.
Thank you so much for that. Much appreciated.
You take care, Kev. Bye-bye. A Deadly Yarn, Kevin Lowe, his name is, Deadly Brother, lead investigator on the Culturally Nourishing Schooling Project, a associate professor he is, and the movement there is from country to the classroom, building relations to empower teachers, students and communities, taking the teachers to the mountain, taking the teachers to community, learning on country, teaching the kids on country. And look, so simple, but a number one ingredient, and should be templated across this big island, Australia. Have you seen Yarn Up Strong? We are here, National Talk Black, with Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. We're live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your dingy country, BBM, Bumrabrip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation. Thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have you seen Yarn Up Strong? National Talk Black, too deadly.
Yo. Keep your head up high. It's all in the heart. One blood, one fire.
We're raised in a valley where our hearts run so free. 'Cause the land will always be here for you and me. 'Cause it's time to stand with pride. So no matter what others say, so keep your head up.
Yeah.
cause this is where my heart will always be. Streets and beats and families will always bring back happiness and memories. We'll always have our ups and downs, but for now it ain't really nothing to worry about.
So just chill with me and just bounce to the sound. You gotta make it count, cause this is how the valley gang break it down.
Now it's time for our people to stand as one. Nyungal and Yalindi and many more to come. I wanna dedicate this to our community. Wujal, wujal, where the rainforest meets the sea.
We're raised in a valley where our hearts run so free. Cause the land will always be here for you and me. Cause it's time to stand with pride. So no matter what others say, so keep your head up high. Cause there will always be another day.
Joe Madden, Director of Child and Family in Far North Queensland. My department is responsible for the child protection system here in Far North Queensland. We work to support parents and protect children when there is evidence of abuse and neglect. Children and young people who can't live safely at home rely on other families coming forward to open their hearts and their homes to care for them. Fostering kinship care is the heart and soul of our child protection system. My hope today is to provide a better understanding of the critical need for more members of the community to consider becoming foster or kinship carers. In 2022-23 year, there was an average of 600 approved carer families in Far North Queensland, which is fantastic. However, we really need more. In the same year, around 1,300 children were living away from home in the region. In other words, they weren't able to live with their families. Most of these were First Nations children. Of these First Nations children, 70% were in home-based care, such as foster or kinship care. However, this means 30%, or around 300 children, were not in foster or kinship care. They were in residential care or other care arrangements. For some young people, residential care is the right place for them because of their individual circumstances. This can include complex needs such as disabilities, and they get great care and support. But what we know is there are far too many very young First Nations children in residential care, and this is not what we want to see. We believe they should be living safely with foster and kinship care families in the community. And we believe this would give these little ones a better chance to thrive, learn and grow up strong in culture and life skills. So today we're asking members of the community to not wait to be asked. We would love for you to put your hand up because there are little ones who need you to come forward today. If you can help, please express an interest to us or to the local foster and kinship care agency in becoming a carer. Once you come forward, you will then receive information on the process, what's needed, and the allowances and the support that you'll receive. We know this might seem daunting to begin with, but we can assure you that agencies are there to train and support foster and kinship carers so they're not alone in doing this important job. Today, we have representatives from our culturally appropriate foster and kinship care service at Wootshopperin. Child Safety funds the organisation to recruit, train and support First Nations foster and kinship carers in Far North Queensland. Karen is able to talk more about the work they do and the support that's available for foster and kinship carers.
Here is an important message from Wootshopperin.
Hi, I'm Karen Salam. I manage the Foster and Kinship Care Service of Wootshopperin Health Service. Are you passionate about making a difference in an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander child's life? Across North Queensland, there is an urgent need for more kinship, foster and relief carers for our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children. Every day, children are being removed from their homes due to harm, neglect or family crisis. What is Wootshopperin's Foster and Kinship Care Service? Wootshopperin's Foster and Kinship Care Service provides support to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander carers, opening their lives and homes to children in times of need. Our placement support workers work with the community to identify safe, caring and loving homes for long or short periods of time that will also provide strong family and cultural connections. Why be a kinship, foster or relief carer? By becoming a Wootshopperin kinship, foster or relief carer, you will help keep Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children and young people safe, during a challenging time in their lives. As a priority, and through your guidance, support and care, you will help our kids stay with or continue to be connected to their family, culture and community and reach their full potential. Being a carer is highly rewarding and makes an enormous difference to the lives of our young people. Carers are also celebrated and acknowledged for their dedication at events like the Fostering Kinship Carers Week. We are here to guide you. Wuchopperen's placement support staff works with carers every step of the way to support them on their journey. Carers will also have access to support and become equipped with new skills and knowledge to help provide care for our children. Additionally, carers receive support and training. Our staff are on call and there is a carer allowance which you can access. If you decide to become a carer, you will have a team of Aboriginal and or Torres Strait Islander workers to help you with any issues and provide strength in times of need. They will be there to celebrate the wins with you and help you move through the challenging times together. What's the next step? Our dedicated team will take you through every part of the process in becoming a carer. So if you are interested and ready to make a difference for our children, call Wuchopperen on 40801080 to learn more.
G'day you mob, this is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now 1-800-422-416.
I got the walking train blues. Steady, steady is the best I can do.
Best I can do.
Got the walking train blues. Steady, steady is the best I can do.
Best I can do.
My dancing days are over, but that's alright. I hardly ever stay up late at night.
No need to boogie and no need to waltz. Seems my legs have got some serious faults.
So I don't twist,
I don't shout.
Just getting there is what it's all about. I got the walking train blues. Steady, steady is the best I can do.
Best I can do.
Got the walking train blues. Steady, steady is the best I can do. Got four wheels of fire and a cushy seat. Just enough room for me and my feet. It's painted red and its brakes are tight.
We can do what did at the traffic lights.
We don't linger,
we don't pause.
We give it a go,
just because.
I got the walking train blues. Steady, steady is the best I can. Walking frame blue, steady, steady is the best I can do.
Best I can do.
No need to rush, I don't care if I'm late. No hurry up to the pearly gates.
Me and Mr. Zimmer, we're the best of friends. Bosom buddies when the evening ends.
So it's early to bed and early to rise. Getting round is an old man's prize.
Got the walking train blues. Steady, steady is the best I can do.
Best I can do.
I got the walking train blues. Steady, steady is the best I can do.
Best I can do.
Dancing days are over, but that's all right. I hardly ever stay up late at night.
So I don't twist, I don't shout.
Just getting there is what it's all about.
I got the walking train blues. Steady, steady is the best I can do.
Best I can do.
Got the walking train blues. Steady, steady is the best I can do.
Steady,
steady is the best I can do.
like a man with a red walking frame.
Yes, my girl. Goes faster than a blue one.
Can't we go now? If we leave now, we'll get there by dawn.
Steady, steady, my girl. We'll get there.
Steady, steady. Slowly, slowly. Oh.
Which way you feel?
Oh, I saw to it now. Can't we, Mother, sit down? Oh.
Got the walking frame. Steady, steady is the best I can.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I come to you live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country as BBM Bumbadrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have you seen Yarn Up Strong, you mob, too deadly. Okay, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Deadly Brother, Jai Murray. And he's a man who's involved in the Indigenous Marathon Project, IMP, squad for 2024. And talk about running marathons. He's just kicking a lot of goals, this Deadly Brother. And we've got Jai on the line. Jai, good morning. How are you?
How you going, Trevor? So you're doing my rung to your brother. That's how are you in my people's language, the Wiradjuri language. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, too Deadly, my brother. Look, before we start, let the mob know who your mob, where you from, Jai.
Yeah, I'm a proud Wiradjuri Ngangbar man, so my mob are from Cowra, which is on Wiradjuri country, and also the Breewar and the Byrock area, which is sort of on, that's Ngangbar country, that's central northern New South Wales.
Too Deadly, beautiful footprint, thank you very much for sharing. Look, congratulations brother, you're involved with the Indigenous Marathon Project squad for 2024. Before we get into that, just tell us a bit of background, the work that you do, your profession, what have you, and then how you got roped up into being part of the IMP, brother.
Yeah, so thanks for asking, it's a deadly story, one I'm really proud of, and I'm really proud to be a part of. Yes. The Indigenous Marathon Project, like we said before, they've been doing some really important work, and to be a part of that is something I'm really grateful for. But I've got a background in health, so I'm a practicing physiotherapist. I've got a degree in physiotherapy, and I mainly work in sports and exercise-based rehab, a lot of gym-based rehab and getting people back to the sports they want to play. But I've always sort of grown up with a real interest and a real passion in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health. I've got some family members that are doing deadly work in that space, and I've always been aware of the injustices our people suffer the healthcare system and the health outcomes that we've got, and how they're not where they should be. And I've always really wanted to, I've had this passion in me to try and do something for our people to live happier, healthier and longer lives so they can be there for their mob, for their community, and just continue to ensure that the world's oldest culture will continue to thrive and endure. So through that, I've started a social media page called The Koori Physio. Yes. Basically, The Koori Physio has two main purposes. One, it wants to educate our mob and inspire our mob to live healthier lives that's in line with our traditional way of life. And the other side is recognising that we can't do it alone, and we need to educate non-Indigenous people, particularly non-Indigenous healthcare workers, about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health issues and the unique needs that we need in that space to thrive and work towards better health outcomes. And all of that sort of, what I've been doing, my path in life is sort of headed down that route. I now have a job off the back of that social media page where I teach at Newcastle University in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health space. So I'm a lecturer and a tutor in Indigenous health, which I'm really passionate about.
How deadly are you, brother? How deadly are you?
Thanks, brother. Thank you. Trying to stay busy, you know.
Good.
But I got involved in the Indigenous Marathon Project actually a couple of years ago in a physio capacity. The then head coach at the time ended up on my bed at my practice as a patient of mine, and we got yarning about it, and I hadn't heard about it until then, and he said, oh, do you want to come and get involved and help us out with a few physio things because of COVID, their physio couldn't get down.
Sure.
And I was like, yeah, absolutely, that would be deadly. And then went and watched them run their marathon, brother, and it was...
Got fired up. Got fired up. Give me running shoes.
lit the fire in the belly, it did, for sure. Like, I saw the emotional and mental challenges that those runners had to go through, and the way that they overcome it really spoke to me. You know, you can't talk about blackfellas without talking about resilience. You know, that's what our culture and our people are built on, and they definitely showed that when they did that marathon. So ever since then, I was like, right, I'm going to apply, and the timing just wasn't right the last couple of years, but this year it was. So I applied this year, and was lucky enough to get picked, brother. And yeah, it's been a journey of a lifetime so far. We've currently done, we've done two training blocks and two training camps and two runs.
Yes.
And basically we do another two, one's in Adelaide, one's out in Alice on country out there, and then we go to New York to run the marathon in November. So
yeah,
training hard, bros. And,
Too deadly. Too deadly, brother. Now, the Indigenous Marathon Project, all under the watchful eye of Robert D. Cicello, is that correct?
That's right. We call him Uncle Rob.
Uncle Rob.
He's the director of the Indigenous Marathon Foundation, and the Indigenous Marathon Project is like the big sort of one of the big components of that. It was originally 15 years ago. So
yes,
this is the 15th year this year, and they've just been doing deadly work, inspiring mob to live happier, healthier lives. Really, so the goals and the values of the Indigenous Marathon Project and the foundation really align with the stuff I'm trying to do with the Koori Physio. So yeah, like I said, just really grateful to be a part of it. And Uncle Rob is he's a really powerful man, and you know, he's not Indigenous. He doesn't have a Indigenous background, but he's really passionate about the health and the well-being of our people. And to see a non-Indigenous fella have so much love and care and kindness towards our people, and really just wanting the best for us, it's quite inspiring to see. It gives you a lot of hope for the country and moving forward, you know.
Well, exactly. Looking at some of the so-called students or runners under him up here in Cairns. We just had the Cairns Marathon. Big shout out to Nadine Hunt. She was part of that. Nathan Schreiber, too deadly brother. And also we had a whole heap of our guys running. Uncle Timmy David, that's Nadine's uncle. And look, just seeing a lot of black people run, and we need to close the gap, and we need to do our bit as well, you know. And young ones are looking at our black people running. It entices them, you know what I mean? And we've got the solution to our problems, haven't we, Joy?
Yeah, that's right, brother. That's right. And when you think about running, you know, particularly long distance running across land, that's in our genes. You know, that's what our old people
walk
used
about
to do to land and to, you know, connect culturally to the country and all that sort of stuff. Was running a way that you can directly tap into the way of our ancestors. So, I talk a lot about working towards healthier lives through cultural domains of health and well-being, and connecting the country and connecting the culture is really powerful for health and well-being for our people. And I believe running's a really, really great way to tap directly into that. So it's great to see more and more mob getting out and trying to take the right steps to a healthier life. And it's not easy, because we've been put in a position, and there's a lot of complex factors that have led us to the path of where we do experience health on a lesser or at a disadvantage to everyone else. So it's not an easy thing to do. So to see everyone getting out there and trying to take responsibility and you know, put themselves in a healthier path is really inspiring. So it's, you know, it sometimes gets hard to get up in the cold Canberra morning to go for runs and train, but when you got that that inspiration there from the rest of your culture and your mob, it gets pretty easy. So
well, they've always said, Joy, that you know, happiness and success is just a decision away. So we just need to make the small decisions as we go along. I mean, when you look at you as a physio professional, but then you're the marathon runner and a black man at that, you know what I mean? Best of both worlds, but beginning's half done. But everything that we want in life is outside our comfort zone, is it not?
That is so true. That is very, very true. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a runner by any means. Like, I've got a background in rugby league like yourself, brother, so all the long distance running I've ever done is the pre season, you know, when they run
the
dust
out, you're
getting ready for the season.
They slap you around pre season,
They do, yeah. You've been down a little bit down in Sydney, did you say? You played down there, Penrith?
I tried with Phil Gould with Penrith, back in the day, that's right, yes.
So you know a little bit about getting out of your comfort zone. Yeah,
big
training,
time. Well, 48 hours on the bus from Cairns to get down there and trial, and then they signed me up for pre-season. So outside your comfort zone, 48 hours on the bus. I felt like a bus when I got there.
That's true, yeah. No, but getting out and do those long runs is uncomfortable, but it gives you a really, when you finish, you feel really great, you know, mentally, physically, spiritually, culturally, you feel really powerful. And that's exactly what you're saying. You've got to get out and put yourselves in those uncomfortable situation, because that's where you grow, you know, and we always want to be working towards growth. And
so we've got the New York City Marathon later on in the year, so you're now training for that, is that right?
That's right, yeah. So how the program works is you There's a six-week training block, and then there'll be a week intensive camp, and then there's a race, and then that works. I think we do four of those or five of those throughout the year, and it works up to the New York Marathon. So we were just up in the Gold Coast 2 weeks ago, or last weekend, for the Gold Coast Half Marathon. So we trained, went for a camp, and then ran in that, and then we've got another one in Adelaide in about 5 weeks, then another one out in Alice in September, and then over to New York. So, yeah, training pretty hard for that at the moment.
So for 2024, New York City, a mob have missed out on the run for 2024, is that right?
Pardon?
The people have missed out on that run to apply to be a part of that for this year.
Yeah, so that's, you apply at the start of the year.
Okay,
The start of the year. It's like an online application process that you do through the Indigenous Marathon Foundation website. And then from there, they run trials all throughout the country. So you go to where, like they would have had one up in Cairns. You go there, you run a 3K time trial, you do an interview based on how you go, then they'll select the squad. And the squad got announced in April, and then we started training in about the very start of May, I think it might have been, or could have been back end of April. So,
and how many in the squad there, John?
There's 12. So 12, they pick six men, six women.
Good.
I think this year there was around 180 or 200 applicants or something like that. And so they narrow it down. But if anyone's interested in it, it is a life-changing experience. Sure. You know, the running is really important, but all the other stuff you get out of it as well. So it's more of, they're trying to identify leaders in the community, Indigenous leaders in the community, so that, you know, they want the right people there to inspire mob to live healthier lives. And if you think that's something for you, then, around the end of the year or early next year, start looking into applying for it. I can't speak highly enough for it. It's going to be life-changing, already life-changing experience for me, and I'm really keen to see where it gets me as a person, you know, within my community. Hopefully it gives me things that I can use to propel my community and my mob forward. So,
deadly, brother, too deadly. And for the people who missed out this year, they can reapply next year, can't they?
Absolutely. So you can apply. Basically, you just got to be between, I think it's 18 and 30 years old.
Yep.
And you can apply as many times as you want. So there's a couple of people in the squad this year that have applied multiple times.
Yes.
There's a few fellas in the past that have applied, you know, up to six, seven times.
Whoa.
So you can apply as many times as you want. And if you, you know, show the dedication and that to it, and you keep applying and keep applying, then you're going to get in at some point. So
Too deadly. Hey, beautiful talking with you, Joy. Thank you for sharing, my brother. Look, enjoy the journey. Enjoy the training. Please keep in touch. And big shout-out to Mob down there. Stay warm, brother, and we'll yarn soon.
Sounds good, Trev. Thanks for having me on, brother. Yeah, well, you stay in those footy shorts up there, cuz.
That's right, warm here.
Yeah.
Take care,
though. Thanks for having me on, brother.
See you. A beautiful yarn there. Joy Murray, his name is, and Woodry and Gimma man, and he's involved in Indigenous Marathon Project, and he's a professional in regarding, he's a physio. So there it is. Went there to help the guys train and regarding, well, physio stuff, and didn't know about the IMP, Indigenous Marathon Project, and look, got involved, he started running, and next minute he's in the squad. So there it is. So wearing two hats and two deadly. This is your daily program, National Talk Black, yarning up strong here. On National Talk Back, your host is Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie, and I'm live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yindindji Country as BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have you say yarn up strong, National Talk Black.
Oh, Yahweh. Oh, Yahweh. Oh, Yahweh.